Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jenna Yauch Erickson. I am an assistant state public defender, and I am here this morning representing the appellant, Mr. Juan Garcia. Mr. Garcia has presented one issue for this court's consideration, that is, whether his conviction should be reversed because he successfully proved an entrapment defense. Entrapment has two prongs. The first prong requires the defendant to prove, by a preponderance of the evidence, that he was induced. The record in this case supports three main hallmarks of inducement, which are repeated contacts by the government agent, the agent's resort to sympathy to get acquiescence, and perhaps most markedly here, initiation, origination of the criminal enterprise by the government agent.
Now, as to this inducement, I've seen various language describing how it's met. It can be persuaded, induced, badgered. Help me to understand the district court's findings here and conclusions. It seems as if the district court found that your client was persuaded by someone, but that someone was other than a government agent. Do you read the findings and conclusions any differently?
I think we're on the same page, Your Honor. The district court's findings are somewhat muddled and confused. This court reviews de novo. Those are all legal conclusions. You are entitled to make your own conclusions without deference. I read the district court's order to conclude at page 6, legal conclusion 15, Garcia was persuaded or convinced to commit the crime. The court then goes on to conclude that Garcia was not motivated by money because he didn't get any money. He's not motivated by drugs because he didn't get any drugs, and that he wasn't motivated by the motivation to save Heidi Fox from being beaten. But the court concluded that something else persuaded him, but apparently external to Mr. Garcia, and doesn't name that thing. Again, this court can review de novo. There's ample evidence in this record to satisfy the inducement prong, frankly, by more than a preponderance of the evidence. We have Heidi Fox repeatedly reaching out to Mr. Garcia, even after she's received a no, even after he has avoided her, after he has hesitated. We have her resorting to sympathy. Again, the case law indicates that's one of the hallmarks of inducement, is some extrinsic motivator to commit this crime. She begged him. The district court found, by the time they had their phone call on December 8th, she was desperate. She begged him. And again, perhaps most markedly here, this was all her idea.
Now, the district court couches some of its analysis in terms of a credibility determination. If we defer to the district court in its credibility decisions, how would we reverse?
You can defer to the district court's credibility finding and nonetheless reverse, because the credibility finding is very narrow, very discreet. This is not a case where the district court finds a witness generally incredible. The district court did not say anywhere in its order that Mr. Garcia was entirely incredible. It found a very narrow portion of his testimony incredible. Mr. Garcia testified his mother had been beaten by a romantic partner. He saw this as a child. He had a, quote, soft spot for battered women. That is why he chose to help Heidi Fox.
Right, but the district court says that his claim that his motivation was to save her from being beaten is not credible.
Correct. So he discarded that part of Mr. Garcia's testimony. But he doesn't have to prove motive. He has to prove inducement. And there are plenty of other findings by the district court, fact findings which I do not dispute and which I believe you do have to defer to, that support inducement. Again, she set up the deal. She picked the place. She picked the time. It was her source of drugs. All of this was engineered by Heidi Fox. Judge.
Go ahead and finish your sentence.
He didn't reach out to her. He never affirmatively contacted her. He didn't offer, hey, I can get you some drugs. Sounds like you're struggling. The entire enterprise, the scheme, originated with Heidi Fox, the government agent.
So I was looking at page 5 of the district court's decision under what he styles as a conclusion of law and says there's no credible evidence that Garcia was badgered or pressured. What do we do with that, what could be seen as a credibility finding, even though it's in the conclusions?
Certain. I think the trouble with inducement is we have all these different synonyms for the test. There's all these different groups of legal language, phrases in the case law to describe inducement. Certainly one of those phrases is badgering, pressure, or persuasion. It's usually that sort of tripartite, those three words. So how I read this is the district court saying no badgering, no pressure, but he finds persuasion. He finds the third of the three. Now, again, we don't know exactly what facts led the district court to make that conclusion. I do believe it's a legal conclusion because inducement is a legal conclusion. The district court was perhaps finding that particular test for inducement, or part of it, two-thirds of it, not satisfied. But again, that's a legal conclusion that you can review yourself.
And you agree that that formulation is the operative test for inducement rather than, I mean, you often refer to the fact that, you refer to the quote from Grilli about whether the criminal intent originates in the enforcement officials of the government rather than in the mind of the accused. How does that factor in?
Well, this is the thing. We have sort of different tests, and there's never been a case that I'm aware of that says that one more than any other applies. They're meant to be, I believe, synonyms for one another. The district court sort of picks and chooses some of those tests and not others. But Grilli, which is, as far as I'm aware, is considered to be the sort of seminal entrapment case in Minnesota, says, did the criminal conduct initiate with the police? That's prong one. That's the test for inducement. Even if you use the badgering, persuasion, or pressure test, it's still satisfied here. We still have persuasion.
But doesn't, I mean, those three words are, I think badgering and pressure are different in degree from persuasion. I mean, persuasion could occur in a very legitimate way. Badgering, the word connotes something that's not so legitimate. But, I mean, if there is persuasion, doesn't it need to be persuasion that's brought about by some undue means?
Absolutely, and it was here. Again, because you have Heidi Fox, who's trying to avoid prison.
But when the district court finds that he was persuaded, mm-hmm. that by itself, doesn't the district court have to find something more than just the fact that he was persuaded?
Well, and the district court didn't find inducement. So certainly the district court found Mr. Garcia's evidence was lacking. Again, that's a legal conclusion. You review that de novo. There are plenty of fact findings here that support a conclusion of inducement.
Are there any factual findings,
yes.
wherever they are, in the district court's opinion,
yes.
that you believe are not supported by the record?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I am not challenging any fact findings, and I don't think I have to. Again, I rely on some of those fact findings to support inducement. Again, what we know, other than all these synonymous tests, other than the legal language for inducement, there are certain things that courts looked for. You can look to this court's opinion in Johnson, which on, I think, lesser facts, finds entrapment. There it was a person who ends up being a CI, is arrested for DWI. He's working off that DWI charge. I believe his name is Hagberg. He sets up what they call a reverse sting, which is apparently the language you use when someone is offered to buy drugs, not sell drugs, which is the typical case. Mr. Hagberg goes to Mr. Johnson, the defendant in the case, and says, hey, do you want to buy some drugs? Johnson says no. But this CI goes back repeatedly. The opinion says repeatedly and keeps giving him this offer. It is the CI's setup. It's all his idea. He, interestingly enough, the defendant in Johnson is only a conduit. As here, Mr. Garcia is a conduit. He walks from one car to another in a Walmart parking lot and transfers drugs and money, getting none for himself. In Johnson, this court quite clearly found entrapment. And the two factors that this court relied on were repeated solicitations by the government and the fact that it was the government's idea. This idea did not come from the defendant, Mr. Johnson. He did not offer, hey, I'd really like some drugs, what's your best price? All of this came from the government agent.
Did HF badger Garcia?
I believe she did, Your Honor, in her own way.
Now, it's a curious thing. I mean, persuading sort of includes the result, but badgering generally does not. I mean, a person can badger by being a pest and repeatedly making inquiries and demands and requests, even if it doesn't persuade the individual to do anything. And the test does include sort of either persuading, badgering, or pressuring. The district court found, or I don't know if it's a finding, it's in the legal conclusions, there was no credible evidence that Garcia was badgered or pressured. Do you concede that the district court is right as a matter of law that HF's conduct did not constitute badgering?
No, absolutely not, Your Honor. That is a legal conclusion. The district court made the incorrect legal conclusion. Another way to analyze this order is to look at the other conclusions the court made. The court is fairly clearly mistaken about the law of entrapment. When you read the order, the thrust of it is he went through with it. The district court uses words like he knowingly did this, he freely chose, is one of the findings. That is entirely irrelevant. Every defendant in the state of Minnesota and the country of the United States that's ever been entrapped has gone through with it. If it weren't the case, we wouldn't have an entrapment defense. The question is, why did the defendant go through with it? Was she or he induced? Then we have tests for inducement. There's a lot of other language out there about inducement. I don't think we can just pin it on this list of badgering, persuasion, or pressure. There's Grilli. Did the conduct initiate with the police? There's all these cases, Johnson included, where this case has found inducement based on facts lesser than what we have here. Again, it's her idea. It's, in fact, her drug dealer who she invites to the Walmart parking lot. She picks the time. She picks the place. Mr. Garcia, who has no drug use, no drug priors, is not at all involved in the drug world, goes there and walks between two cars. Heidi Fox has 5 prior drug convictions and 2 fraud-related convictions. We know she lied to the drug task force agents about those priors. She's working off her charges.
Does the record include any documentation of the content of the communication between HF and Garcia?
No, Your Honor, it doesn't. In part because we never got to a full jury trial, that sort of evidence was never adduced. So we have the testimony from the entrapment hearing. That's what the record is based on.
So, I mean, when you say that evidence was never adduced, is it not relevant in the entrapment proceeding in and of itself as to the nature of the communications that she had with Garcia as to whether or not he was induced or persuaded by her comments? I mean, am I correct that all we have is a characterization of what was said in those conversations?
You have Mr. Garcia's testimony, and there's one officer who very briefly testifies about the controlled by money. That's what we have. That's the record. It's plenty. Again, district court makes all sorts of fact findings that support inducement. This court can defer to the fact findings completely, including the credibility finding. Nonetheless, doing a de novo review of the legal conclusions find inducement. Repeated requests.
I'm having a difficult time accepting a de novo review for the entire decision. And I mean, it seems like almost everything in the district court's order is fact-bound. If we were to apply a clear error standard of review, I mean, would your appeal still succeed under that standard of review?
Let me make sure I follow. So if you would apply clear error review to the question of whether Mr. Garcia was induced?
Correct.
Absolutely. Again, we still have all of the same evidence, and it would be clearly erroneous for the district court to conclude. Again, you can see the court's reasoning. He shows his work fairly well. He uses this odd coercion, aiding and abetting, knowledge, knowingly went through with it. That's absolutely not the law. There's all these other facts about what Heidi Fox did and what Juan Garcia did. She set it all up. She went back to him multiple times after he said no. I believe the district court finds she begged. She begged him to do this. He had already said no. In Johnson, this court found facts lesser than that to be entrapment. Certainly the United States Supreme Court in Sherman found very similar facts to be entrapment.
So, and on the issue of standard review, for the de novo standard, you cite to an unpublished opinion. I'm sure that you looked high and low for something that was precedential and found nothing?
Yes, there aren't very many entrapment cases in Minnesota, Your Honor. Cases like Johnson, which is an older case as well from this court, have sort of that decades ago style where the court just launches into a legal analysis without announcing the standard of review. I think the only way to read Johnson is that they did a de novo review. There's no statements about deference. There's no statements about clear error. There's no real nitty-gritty nitpicking of fact findings in Johnson. So again, you'd have to read between the lines, but I believe that court was doing a de novo review. I think it's akin to a Fourth Amendment search issue, right, that this court does all the time, and the standard is very well accepted that you review fact findings for clear error, but when the facts are undisputed, you review the legal conclusions de novo. So in a typical search case, the district court is required to make all sorts of fact findings about what happened, the raw facts. the driving conduct and the stop and how the officer approached and what questions he asked. But then if the court is, say, analyzing reasonable suspicion, the presence of reasonable suspicion, that's a legal conclusion. The facts may add up to reasonable suspicion or not, but when a district court writes, I found reasonable suspicion, you review that de novo. Similarly here, the district court had to find all sorts of raw facts. What happened? When did it happen? Where did it happen? Whose idea was it? The district court did that. We are not challenging any of those raw fact findings.
There are some things that I think can fairly be described as historical facts. They are objective. They are, you know, if they're knowable and if they're known, then it's clear what occurred. Some facts or factual issues seem to be more, you know, a matter of characterization, or perhaps they're ultimate findings of fact, or so, you know, they involve the judge's processing of the historical facts. And I think, you know, ultimately then we get to some legal conclusions. And I feel like this is a good example of what the difficulty in some of that line drawing. But whether he was induced, whether the government induced him to commit the crime, it just feels to me like it's kind of a fact-bound determination. But
I see my time has expired, if I may simply respond to that question.
You may answer the question.
I mean, for one, Slagle says it's de novo review. Granted, that is an unpublished opinion that is not precedential on this court. Mm-hmm. If the only legal conclusion is essentially a yes or no question, inducement yes or no, again, I still believe that whether you review it de novo or for clear error, the district court erred here. We have all sorts of facts that the district court found and then did not credit. The sort of, on the hierarchy, slightly lower level of generalization of was it badgering, persuasion, or pressure, I believe that's the legal language. That's the test. That's this two-prong thing that's very clearly set out as a legal question and is reviewed de novo. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
May I please the court? My name is Charles Connor Kremens. I represent the state of Minnesota, and I am the respondent in this case. I'm also an assistant county attorney at the Dakota County Attorney's Office. Your Honors, first of all, I would like to say that there's substantial agreement as it relates to what the law of entrapment is in the state of Minnesota. State v. Grilley lays out, it is the seminal case, it lays out the standard for finding entrapment. Where there is contention here is the standard of review in which this court should examine the district court's pretrial order on entrapment. The state's position, or the respondent's position in this case, is that when we look at this order, it's laid out initially with a findings of fact section. In that findings of fact section, the district court judge said these, quote, facts, he put facts in quotes, and then said, laid out here for the purposes of whether entrapment occurred.
Why does that matter how the district court characterized it?
Well, Your Honor, because after that, after he put facts in quotes, he then laid out the testimony that was put forth by appellant at that hearing.
Let me see if I'm right on the facts as found by the district court. HF first asked Garcia to participate in the drug deal, and Garcia said no, right?
That's correct.
And then HF followed up in that conversation and injected sympathy into it, saying that she really needed him to participate so she wouldn't be beaten up by her boyfriend, and he still said no. Is that correct?
Your Honor, that was the appellant's testimony, absolutely.
But that was a fact found by the district court.
It was, however.
Let me just follow up to see if I understand all the facts. Then HF offered him $50, and he said no.
Correct.
Correct. She then called him multiple times over a period of, I don't know how many weeks, and he declined to take her calls.
Correct.
Fearing that she wanted to talk to him more, requesting that he participate in a drug deal that he had already said no three times to.
That was his testimony.
And that was no dispute as to what happened.
Correct.
And then he was asked whether he would allow this drug dealer, MRW, to use his phone. And that was all, at least at that point. Can he use your phone while you're meeting with him for this fantasy football social?
That was on the date of the offense, Your Honor, December 8th, 2015. It was right. The second time that they spoke on the phone. First, the initial conversation was he said, no, I won't do this. And then the second conversation, he acquiesced to allow her to use his phone.
Right. So you can use my phone, not I'll deal any drugs or transport drugs, but I'll let him use the phone and you talk to him. And that's it so
Correct.
Far. And then HF stays on the phone with MRW for an hour.
Yes.
So presumably Garcia can't really leave if he wanted to because his phone is still being used.
Yeah, he allowed that to occur.
Right, he allowed his phone to be used, but that was all. That's not a crime, is it?
No, he...
Okay, so at that point, I just want to... This is a strange case to me because he had announced to Garcia, she asked him what he was doing after the fantasy football, and he said he was going to a specific location, a particular Walmart, afterwards in West St. Paul, right?
Correct.
And then after he gets his phone back, he's told that's where the drug deal is occurring, at the very Walmart where he's going.
Yes, Your Honor. Without further discussion with Ms. Fox, he was told by MRW, if you look at the...
Right, he was told by MRW that this after is... MRW and HF, Ms. Fox, were on the phone for an hour. So the decision to go to the Walmart to have the drug deal was not Mr. Garcia's. It was an arrangement between the agent of the government, Ms. Fox, and the drug dealer.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
Have you found any other case anywhere in this state or in the country where all of this is something like this occurs, where the actual crime is arranged by the informant to occur following the accused and it not found to be entrapment?
No, Your Honor. However, I think it's important to point out that after that phone call concluded, Garcia acquiesced to take part in that transaction based off the instructions from MRW. So,
right. That happens.
But who's not a government agent?
In every entrapment case, that's what happens. Somebody acquiesces.
Right, but based, again, the initial conversation where he says no is with a government agent. A subsequent conversation is to use his phone. He allows that to happen, knowing that a drug deal will take place using his phone, which I concede is not a crime. However, at the conclusion of that phone call, he then agrees to go to the Walmart based off of what MRW is telling him, saying there's this drug transaction
happening.
He
had already said he was going to the Walmart. He didn't agree to go to the Walmart as a result of the phone call. He told HF he was going to the Walmart, and somehow that's where the drug deal happens to occur.
I think the purpose changed because, again, if we look at the district court's order.
Let me ask it this way. Have you seen a case with what I would call badgering, a case with less badgering than this case that turned out not to be entrapment?
I think the cases cited by appellant in this that point out to badgering or repetitious sort of interaction between the government agent and the defendant are in volume much more.
Let me put it a different way.
If you look,
let me ask it a different way. Was HF's conduct in asking Garcia over and over and over again to participate in the drug deal, despite his refusals, badgering?
No.
How many requests do you think are necessary before it appears as if badgering is occurring?
For this court to find that this was badgering, two requests would have to be the, more than one would have to get you there because she initially asked, he said, I'm on parole, I can't do this. And then he presumed that she was calling about drugs, right? But there was never any interaction. Those phone calls were never received.
So you would call that first conversation only one act of badgering?
Act of badgering.
Only one request?
Yes.
She asked him whether he would do it, he said no. You agreed to that. She asked him, well, would you do it? I'm going to be beaten up. He said no. I'll offer you $50 if you'll do it. He said no. At least the way the district court characterized that conversation, there were three requests and three denials.
I characterize it more as one denial and her putting three points of support in terms of in favor of her, him doing it. You know, here's some enticements, $50. I also have this jealous boyfriend.
I think that's
so
the way
forth.
The district court characterized it. He told Garcia he didn't want to be involved. He did not want to take any risks. Offered to pay him. He still refused. The notion of still refusal suggests to me that the district court understood these facts the way I understand them, which is, or the way we have to accept them, which is that there were multiple requests that were made, followed by multiple refusals.
I think what's important here is when you look at the respondent's position here is that under conclusions of law, under that heading, the district court made credibility determinations. In other words, it made findings. It just put it under the heading of conclusions of law. And one of those credibility determinations was explicitly about whether he said there is no credible evidence that appellant was pressured or badgered. The district court did not say there was no evidence that he was pressured or badgered. He said there was no credible evidence.
This is after the district court already found that there were multiple requests made in that first call and that there were multiple calls later that Garcia perceived as her intending to make further requests.
I think that's
so
important, Your Honor, though.
Isn't that a basis for us to say the district court clearly erred when it said there was no evidence of badgering, when the district court found, as a matter of fact, multiple requests that were refused?
Again, he didn't find that there was no evidence of badgering or pressure. He found that there was no credible evidence.
Well, the district court doesn't say the following are, under the fact findings, the following things are only representations, but these are facts that the district court was finding for the purposes for its analysis. And the district court doesn't say that Garcia claims that HF made these multiple requests, but that HF, in fact, made multiple requests. You're asking us, I think, to treat the district court's findings in a way the district court did not describe them by saying, well, these were statements, but they weren't really findings. The district court was really saying these things were incredible, even though the district court calls them facts. Am I correct in the way you're asking us to recharacterize the district court's findings?
Your Honor, I was not asking you to recharacterize it. I was just emphasizing that the word credibility in there does not necessarily negate that there's no evidence that that he put forth in his testimony that he was pressured and badgered. What I was emphasizing the word credibility because I think it's the linchpin of this case is that the judge made a credibility determination as to the reasons put forth by appellant as to why he committed this crime. And the state's position is that those credibility determinations are to be reviewed for clear error.
How do you interpret the district court as describing the motive for Garcia in committing the crime? What do you say the district court found as his actual motive if it wasn't persuasion by HF?
The described motive is silent. What the district court is looking for is whether there was pressure, badgering, and persuasion. I feel as though in interpreting the order, he outright says there was no pressure or badgering. And then he does say that the appellant was persuaded, but the persuasion piece, he rejects that the reason put forth by appellant for committing the crime, namely to prevent an assault of HF by her boyfriend, was not credible. And then he provides, the district court provides two explicit reasons for why that's not credible.
Okay, let's assume it's not credible that the reason was to avoid her being beaten up. But the district court does say that he was nevertheless pressured. Well, why isn't that a basis for us to reverse, acknowledging the district court's factual finding that Garcia was indeed pressured? And why wouldn't we just conclude that meets the entrapment
I think that,
element?
I think that the district court does not explicitly state that appellant was pressured. I think
persuaded.
The persuaded.
The district court does say that
it absolutely persuaded. Absolutely does.
So why wouldn't we just rest on that determination and reverse as a matter of law because the district court failed to give effect to that finding?
Because in order for inducement to occur, the government agent needed to persuade appellant. And here,
so who was it who persuaded Garcia if it wasn't HF? As you read the district court's findings.
As I read it, though, the articulated reasons for doing the for committing the crime is that I'm preventing the appellant is preventing this assault, right? And the district court said that's not credible. It's absolutely not credible. And when you remove that, if you reject it, what's left to show that there was some unduly pressure, badgering, or persuasion to get the appellant to commit this crime? What's left if that's removed or rejected?
What about repeated requests?
And respondent's position in this case is that there were two direct communications. One was a phone call where, yes, the appellant refused to commit the crime. Then there was repeated phone calls where no one connected. And then subsequently there was a phone call where the request was somewhat different. It was, can MRW use your phone to communicate with the confidential informant? So it was somewhat different. And somewhere during that conversation, appellant acquiesced to commit this crime without any further involvement of the confidential informant. He was initially going to the Walmart to buy presents. That's what his testimony represents. However, during that phone call, he knew that a crime was going to be committed at that Walmart, and at the conclusion of the phone call, MRW instructed him, "You're going to participate in this," and he acquiesced and said, "Okay," and that's reflected in the order as well, Your Honor.
Counsel, can I take you back to something you said earlier, which I think relates to Judge Ross's questions about how we read the facts? So you said that the fact that the choice of the district judge to put facts in quotes.
Yes,
was somehow significant. And when I read that to the district court was saying, well, look, these are facts for this proceeding, understanding there may be a trial later. And isn't that all the district court saying? I ask because I know I have seen some district court orders where the judge is just saying, he testified like this, she testified like that. But that doesn't seem to me what the judge is doing here in these facts. He seems to be, this happened.
And
do you disagree with that?
I just, Your Honor, I notice I'm out of time. May I respond?
You sure, certainly may.
Your Honor, I do think that it's significant insofar as he puts facts in quotation marks, outlines the appellant's testimony, and then immediately says in his conclusions of law, this, or not necessarily immediately, but very soon after putting conclusions of law, he says that this is not credible. He makes a credibility determination that the important findings of fact are around pressure, persuasion, and badgering, right, to find inducement. As soon as we get to conclusions of law, he says these things are not credible.
Basically, you're asking us to read these factual findings as a summary of appellant's testimony and nothing more?
Yes, when coupled with the fact that he found those three important areas to be not credible, Your Honor.
I have a question, Judge Ross, about the hearing. You were there, it appears, from the district court's order. I'm curious, who were the witnesses called by each party, and did you have an opportunity to present evidence on the issue, the second issue, predisposition, or on the other hand, was the hearing, in a sense, bifurcated, or what?
Thank you, Your Honor. At the hearing, it was very clear from the onset that it was a burden-shifting test where the appellant would go first and try to show inducement by preponderance of the evidence, and then if successful, the burden would shift to the state to show predisposition beyond a reasonable doubt. The state had noticed two witnesses, and the defense had noticed one witness, and then the defendant obviously testified. An officer testified basically simply to prove that the confidential informant was acting as a government agent. Then the appellant testified, which is clear from the order. At the conclusion of his testimony, The district court judge ruled from the bench, no inducement. No inducement occurred. He then issued a order that we have before us showing his findings of fact and conclusions of law. But the burden never shifted to the state because the judge ruled from the bench there was no inducement. So in this case, if your honors are inclined to rule in favor of the appellant's arguments, the remedy is not a simple reversal of the conviction. It would be to be remanded back to the district court stage, specifically for an evidentiary hearing, so that the state could have an opportunity to show predisposition beyond a reasonable doubt.
Thank you.
One more question for you. Does the state concede that HF was an agent of the government in her role as procuring this arrangement with Garcia's involvement?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to talk a little bit about the remedy. This court will correct me if I'm wrong, but my recollection of the record is there were no witnesses noticed. There's no filed notice anywhere in the record that the state was going to call witnesses at this hearing. Here's what we do know. In its thorough cross-examination of Mr. Garcia, the prosecutor, Mr. Prokopowicz, asked questions and used the word predisposition. Used that word. Asked questions and was very specific that he's trying to get to, quote, on page 40, your predisposition to deal drugs. The attorneys made arguments at the close of testimony. Prosecutor, again, Mr. Prokopowicz, made multiple arguments in which he used the word predisposition. On page 78, predisposition doesn't have to exist for a day. It doesn't have to exist for a week. Predisposition occurred even by the defendant's own testimony. Several pages later, on page 81, he was obviously willing and predisposed to help Heidi Fox. To the extent it's an open question on this record whether or not that state sort of presented its case, we have to look at the record.
Did the district court ever, turn to the prosecutors and say, you know, now you may call your witnesses?
No, Your Honor. What else is absent from this record is any sort of offer of proof from the state as to what they would have put on. Any sort of, hey, Your Honor, I'm calling these witnesses during this hearing, nowhere in the record. There were discussions about how are we going to do this hearing? What's the procedure like? It's somewhat unusual. No statements about we're going to do this burden-shifting test as a bifurcated hearing. Nothing. I'm also unaware of any authority that says either that's how you do the hearing or in this circumstance, the state gets a remand to have a second bite at this apple.
This was not trial, correct?
It was not
a trial. Pre-trial hearing.
It was an evidentiary hearing, Your Honor. Again, we have to go from what we have in the record. What we have in the record is the prosecutor making arguments about predisposition, asking questions about predisposition. The state had a burden. Beyond a reasonable doubt, it had its chance to satisfy that burden.
So your position is that the state, that the way the hearing went, even though the district court made a determination only on the inducement prong, was that all of the evidence was presented by both parties that was going to be presented at the hearing?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the only fair assumption at this point, based on what's in the record, is that it is full and complete. We cannot speculate about what might have happened or what could have happened. And the state, frankly, had strategic reasons not to call Heidi Fox. She's got 5 drug priors, 2 fraud priors, lied to the drug task force. Perhaps they didn't want her to be cross-examined. I don't know. I wasn't there. But again, based on what we have in the record, it is full. It is complete. Certainly, we would prefer a remand to no remedy at all, but I don't believe that's the most appropriate remedy here. The state had a burden, and it didn't satisfy that burden. A few other brief things, Your Honor. A defendant in an entrapment case does not have to prove the reason he was entrapped. Again, if we go back to Johnson, back to Sherman, in Johnson, the defendant set up a drug deal with a different buyer. In Sherman, the defendant actually procured drugs for the CI. In neither case does it appear that the defendant proved why he did so. The defendant simply acquiesced to government inducement. Perhaps Juan Garcia was in love with Heidi Fox, and that's why he did it. We don't know. He doesn't have to prove that. He has to prove inducement and did so here.
What about the argument that Mr. Crimmins makes that, in fact, Ms. Fox had ceased her communication at least at the point of the phone exchange at the fantasy football social gathering? And so it must be that the district court concluded that the motivation by Garcia to participate in the drug deal was his pressure or experience or relationship with MRW?
A few things, Your Honor. There is nothing in the record to support that, and the district court did not make that finding. Mr. Garcia testifies he hardly knew Mr. Walker. They were in a fantasy football league together. He knew his name. He knew his name was Mike. Other than that, they weren't friends. They didn't communicate outside. I believe he specifically asked by the state if he felt pressured or coerced by Mr. Walker, and he said no. He says, the reason that I did it, again, he doesn't have to prove that. The reason that I did it was because I didn't want her to get beat up. Now, for whatever reason, the district court found that not credible. But again, we don't have any other sort of reason. The district court makes, I believe, two different fact findings that Heidi Fox is a government agent, and at all relevant times, she's working as a government agent. It's her conduct that gets Mr. Garcia to walk between those two cars. She picks the time. She picks the place. She was aware he was going there. She was aware this fantasy football meeting is ending. She tells Walker to go there with the drugs. All of this criminal scheme originated from her, not from Mr. Garcia. We would request that you reverse his conviction or, in the alternative, that you remand for a hearing. If so, I would ask that the mandate be limited to additional fact findings by the court and not additional evidentiary hearing, in the sense that there wouldn't be evidence, a second chance to present evidence. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel.
Thank you.
Well argued. Matter is taken under advisement, submitted at this date, and we will issue our opinion within the statutory period.